third podcast of the season, 2014 FIA Motocross World Championship. Adam Wheeler and Paul Malin, of course, here again, just rattling off some, I don't know, pick an adjective, Paul. I wouldn't like to say BS, but we've got some thoughts and opinions, you know, coming up ahead of this third round of the World Championship here in Beto Carreira, Brazil. Third year we've been to this track. It hasn't changed much. Still very red, hard pack, but what is fluctuating quite a bit is the weather, isn't it?
Yeah, and the first time we came here in 2012, Saturday was a perfect racetrack. We had a lot of rain Saturday night, Sunday morning, and it was a real mudder. I think we got away with it pretty much last year, but you know, knowing how hard it can rain and the rain that is forecast tomorrow on race day, it could be one of those Grand Prix that could certainly define the early part of the championship chase, both in MXGP and in MX2, which is already turning out to be quite an interesting GP in its own this weekend, isn't it?
It's the last weekend of March, so this race is maybe 2 months earlier than we've been here before. We've been here like in May before, and it's kind of around autumn time here. So the thinking, I guess, has
early
been,
autumn,
yeah,
as well.
Let's push the race a little bit closer to summer, maybe with more of a thought towards better weather conditions. But it hasn't really kind of worked out, has it? I mean, it's been raining throughout, like heavy showers. I mean, the skies over here are just switching from sunshine and blue sky to big, voluptuous clouds are about to sort of dump their load any minute, so it's really kind of unpredictable.
Yeah, and the thing is, as well, it was considerably cooler at those previous Grand Prix that we'd had here. So it's hotter, it's more humid. The sun is, you know, really hot when it comes out from behind the clouds. And there are going to be some riders who, the last couple of years of being here, might have been looking forward to coming back slightly cooler, even though we're in South America. But actually arriving thinking, well, haven't, you know, planned for this kind of warm weather, because they're 28 degrees again already and humid. And I think, so the two factors that we've got, even if it rains tomorrow, it's still going to be around 28 degrees and humid, but they're going to be wet and on a muddy racetrack if the rain that's predicted does arrive.
Yeah, we're in a region of Brazil, Santa Catarina, that's, you know, it's on the coast. It's about an hour's flight down south from Sao Paulo. We came here in 2009, I think the first time. We stayed in Canalinha, track which was wet again. 2010 we were out to Campo Grande, and then the last kind of 3 years we've been here. First year we were here. It's quite an amazing setup here, by the way, because we're right on the outskirts of a theme park. It's like being at Chessington Water Adventures, or, you know, if you're in the UK, then it's like an Alton Towers kind of setup. First year we were here, rained a lot. Christophe Porcel, I think, won by more than a minute in the first moto. It was a real lottery of a Grand Prix. Second year, Tony Cairoli, I think, won last year.
Yeah, 58th Grand Prix victory last year.
That's right, a good stat. So, you know, you had a few kind of, strange results coming up, like Kevin Stuyvesant taking his first podium on, what was the HM Plant, KTM UK.
The first podium in 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Christophe Charlier in MX2 class last year, taking his first career podium, Jose Butron beating Herlings, you know, that was one of the only races he lost in the super final, the ill-fated super final last year, so... I mean, Beto Carreira has been seen of a few surprising kind of results, hasn't it? So, MX2 is going to be a shock again.
And that's what I mean. You know, we've got the weather and we've got the track conditions when it gets wet. It's not like a normal wet sand race, for instance. The ground is quite heavy, quite, you know, sticky, clay-like. But let's talk about MX2. Jeffrey Herlings, the championship leader, who's had the red plate, since April of 2012, something like that. Some ridiculous streak, which is a record in itself, I'm sure. And he's not here this weekend.
That's the big news, isn't it?
That is the big news. But even though we heard that he damaged the shoulder in a Dutch championship race last week in practice, that he wasn't going to be here, there were still a lot of people in the rumour mill saying, but we still think he could arrive because of what he did in Lierop last year. He's not riding in Lierop the final round, and suddenly he arrives after riding in the morning on Friday and said, no, I feel fine, I don't want to let the home fans down. So, but we can report that he's not here this weekend, and
but that's not because he didn't want to come.
No, and I think he needed. I think everybody in KTM that's on the ground at the Motocross Grand Prix have pretty much said, "Well, look, you know, if you want to come, you come, but we haven't got a bike prepared for you because we're not expecting you to be here and everything else. And if you want to come, then you have to kind of clear it with somebody above us and above Stefan Evans, and that means Pit Beyer, that means even higher up,
senior management.
Yeah, and." And we're guessing that he's maybe not had that conversation, or he just couldn't get a flight. Because if he could have got a flight, he would have been here, I'm sure. But the other side of that is, I was talking to Dirk Grubel, the technical director, yesterday. And I said, based on what happened in Lierop when he did arrive, and against everybody else's expectations. He said, yeah, but last year the championship was won. But the downside of it was he damaged his shoulder more, that he then had to have longer off and
miss the Nations,
had to have a longer period of recovery during the off-season where he couldn't do any upper body training. So then he resorted to running and running more and more and more to where he had his leg fracture that kept him off the bike again. And he said for him to be here this weekend would be, you know, championship suicide. Try and sit out for one race, see if it heals in time for Italy, and hopefully come back and get your championship on track. The good thing that he does has, he has, what, 23-point advantage at the moment? So even if it's muddy tomorrow, I can't see people getting a double race victory. He might even still leave here with the red plate, but it's very unlikely, given that, you know, whoever's 23 points behind him is going to be somewhere in the 40s to 50s points mark to win the overall Grand Prix, and that we are going to see a new championship leader when we leave Brazil to go to Italy.
Well, that's the kind of the whole unpredictable part of this MX2 class. I mean, when Dean Ferris won the Belgian Grand Prix last year, he went 1-1. I don't think anyone would have said, well, those two Yamahas of, like, Maxime Dupuis as well would have been, you know, leading the Grand Prix. So, you know, suddenly in the press I've written that there's maybe six riders that could earn, you know, Glenn Kognos, the only other former Grand Prix winner in the current field. So, you know, there are a number of riders that could make a little bit of a career milestone near a better Carrera.
But look what happened last year in Brazil. How many people blew themselves apart with the expectation and the realisation that I could win a Grand Prix. And let's not forget, Geoffrey Herlings last year was the only MX2 rider that had won the only rider in MX2 that had actually won an MX2 GP in the class last year. So suddenly, you know, that's now two people on the grid. One of them is not here, he's racing in America, Dean Ferris. So as it goes to the line tomorrow, Glenn Kolbnoff is the only Grand Prix winner, and he's probably the only one that has that experience, knowing what it's like to win it. And he didn't realise he'd won it until he came over the line, you know, when the team said, you've just won the GP in Great Britain. So there's going to be guys that we expect to do well. Tonus and Ferrandis on the Kawasaki's, Max Anstey. If it's muddy, I think Roman Febber is a good shout for the podium, certainly at top three, maybe the overall win. I've seen him ride in the mud before, and if he gets a good start, I think he's more than capable as anybody else.
Yeah, I was just curious, actually. We don't have any papers in front of us here as we're recording this on Saturday morning, but, you know, I wonder when was the last Grand Prix when Geoffrey Herlings was beaten in a, you know, a stand-up fight. It must have been the British Grand Prix 2012. Tommy Searle won the last Grand Prix of 2012 in MX2 in Tuchintal, but Herlings retired with a mechanical that day.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think Learop was before that. So it must have been the British Grand Prix, I think, the last time he was.
Possibly, beaten. Yeah. And that was a great atmosphere as well. So
it was almost 2 years, you know. It's a phenomenal long time, like you were saying with the red plate.
Yeah, and there were times when he was close last year, you know, and obviously this year he's kind of eked it out, didn't he, in Qatar after Anstey went out with a machine problem in the first race. You know, he had to work hard for it to get through, but once Anstey was out of the way, he was right on the guys in second and third, that once he passed those with a couple of laps to go, he was home and dry. So, you know, he hasn't had it easy this year by any means because of his lack of winter preparation, lack of ride time and all that. So, but, you know, we have to look forward to this race, I think, in MX2, because, like I say, there's guys out there that think they can go and win a race, and how much pressure are they under? And there's guys that don't expect to win a race, but conditions tomorrow might play into their hands, and suddenly they'll cross the line and be, wow, I've just won my first GP. Yeah. Or cold enough, I'm a two-time winner.
They are different bikes.
Yeah.
You know? So, but, I mean, let's face it, if the MX2 world champion, after the press release, after all the sort of the conjecture throughout the week that he wasn't going to race it, if he did show up on a late-night flight or whatever and go in at the last minute, it would have been a farce, wouldn't it? I mean, he's done this kind of thing before, like, I'm injured, I'm hurt, oh no, my season's ruined.
Yeah.
And then he's turned up and then gone 1-1.
Yeah, he's the master of the gamesmanship at the moment and the mind games.
But he's running out, Paul. I don't think it's working anymore.
No,
I
mean, and to be honest, I think you don't have to look too much further than the team awning and the garage, maybe, to sort of see there's a little bit of that as well, you know, kind of how long are you going to keep playing the games for? And I think, to be honest, you know, if it does continue, somebody high up has just got to say, you know what, enough of the games, you know, because it's not doing you any favours. While it can hit the social media and everyone's thinking, yeah, talk about him the whole time, you know, the team are only going to take so much of it and everything else. Like I said, you know, there's people there saying that, well, if he does arrive, we haven't got a bike prepared for him.
Yeah.
And if he did arrive this morning, just in time for the close of technical control, there would have been some red faces in that orange corner, and there would have been a lot of work for them to do in sort of like the 2 hours that they would have had to prep that bike since the last time it had ridden in Thailand 2 weeks ago.
I think Jeffrey's matured a lot, but you know that. I mean, you could also say that desire to compete, even though he's struggling and he's a little bit hurt, is an admirable.
He's a racer. He's a racer. He doesn't like losing. He doesn't want to give up his world championship crown. He doesn't like to lose a race.
Yeah.
And if there's every chance that he thought he could be here, he would have been here. But you've also got to look at the potential damage that it could do to his championship. Yeah. He's a two-time winner. He, you know, the first one there was a fight with Tommy. Last year was a walkover. This year he's not started strongly or as strongly as he'd hoped, and we know the reasons why. But to put everything on the line this weekend, to potentially miss 5 or 6 or 7 GPs as a result of damaging the shoulder, like I said, is championship suicide. So he's got 23 points in the bag on everybody else. Just take that and maybe go away from here only 10 or 15 points behind. That's not a big deficit to make up in the greater scheme of the championship itself.
Do you think he's going to lose the red plate this weekend? What do you think?
I think he is. I think he has to. Unless we get some far out kind of thing that, you know, Max Anstey, let's say, could go and win 2 races. But he's not the one that's 23 points behind because of his, you know, his bad result in Thailand and Qatar.
Yeah.
So suddenly he could win, and he might be within shout.
Yeah, 2 or 3 points.
We're talking Ferrandis. We're talking the guys that are there. And you know, I don't know. I think I've only ever seen Dylan Ferrandis ride once in the wet, in the real mud, which would have been Saint-Jean when he was a European rider with the year that Fevre, that Romain Fevre was the winner. And that's why I say Fevre was good in the mud that day, and Ferrandis wasn't. I think he had one good race and one not so good race, but obviously that was a few years ago, so hopefully the mud riding skills have improved.
It was hardly muddy O&A last year when Ferrandis scored a podium in MX2, but it was kind of damp. It was a little bit rough and technical, but we'll have to see how much rain we get tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, other news in MX2 this weekend, Christophe Charlier using Christophe Charlier's factory engine been used by Petr Petrov
yeah.
and the Kameo racing team. Looking around, what else have we got? Jose Butron, this is where he scored another podium for Spain. Last year. So he's got to be another guy that so far has been a little bit underwhelming this season. So the Spaniard on the factory engine KTM, and we should be expecting a bit more from him this weekend.
But he was one of those that blew himself out with Arnhem and the realisation that he was going to be a potential GP winner. Jordi Tixier hadn't had a great start to the season. What are we expecting from him this weekend? Like I say, you can go down the list of top 10 guys and probably a couple of guys that are outside the top 10 that shouldn't be there, and you can pick a name out of the hat, and anybody should be more than capable of winning it. And all it's done by not having Herlings around is lit the fuse in terms of what could be a quite an explosive MX2 GP on Sunday.
There's a bit of buzz going on outside because the MX2 free practice is just about to start, so let's quickly go over the MXGP class. Tony Cairoli, Gauthier Paulin, could we see a third different Grand Prix winner this weekend, do you think?
Possible. Because at the end of the day...
Sorry, excuse me. I need you 1 second, please. Just a second.
Yeah. MXGP.
Yeah.
Let's talk about MXGP.
Just go to the... There's a buzz outside, so we can pick up from there. Yeah.
There's a bit of a buzz going on outside, so as you know, you can probably hear in the background, so the MX2 free practice is just about to start, the first session of this Grand Prix of Brazil. So let's quickly go over the MXGP class pool. We've had Tony Cairoli winning in Thailand, we've had Gauthier Paulin winning in Qatar, so could we see a third different winner? I mean, somebody like Clément de Sal got closer, didn't he, and Sriracha, so... have you got any kind of thoughts or vibes on that?
I wouldn't go too far past Max Nagel if it rains.
Ooh.
You know, because he won the qualifying race here last year. I don't think he's too fussed whether it rains or not. You know, whereas some people go, oh, it's going to rain, so I'll just go and ride conservatively. And I might put Tony Cairoli in that conservative bracket this early in the season, knowing that he's got an advantage at the top of the standings. If it's muddy and raining, if he makes a good start, fine, you know. But, again, not the strongest mud rider, Tony Cairoli, really, I don't think. Sean Simpson, he's relishing the fact that it's going to rain on Sunday.
Podium shot.
Huh?
good podium shot.
A good podium shot, and I think it could be a strange podium this weekend, just like it was in Lerop last year. You know, we could see Simpson in there because of his mud riding exploits, Max Nagel, and then after that, possibly a DeSalle or
Van Horbeek, perhaps.
Maybe a Van Horbeek, maybe even a Frossard, you know.
Yeah.
So, again, I think we're going to, hopefully, the weather could play one of those vital roles in this Grand Prix, and it might just be one of the most unexpected podium and GPs of the season.
It's a little bit hard to call just as we're starting activities, but, I mean, if you if we're going to throw, like, our cards on the table, who would you pick for MX2 and MXGP this weekend?
I'm going to go a little bit sort of curveball and say maybe a Romain Fevre for the overall in MX2, and this is based on if it rains, and maybe a Nagel or Simpson.
I think Glenn Coulthard for me, I think he's due in MX2. I think a little bit of experience. Again, he won the qualification here last year on KTM, now on Suzuki. So for me, he's looking in good shape for that victory. And MXGP, it's impossible. It's impossible. I really, I think it would have to be someone like Pirelli, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll see if we can check in a little bit later after practice, just 10 minutes for us to, you know, summarise what we've seen today. You know, if it does rain, it's not supposed to do so much today. I think more 60% chance tomorrow.
Yeah.
So we'll see how this British Grand Prix, how this Brazilian Grand Prix develops through the weekend. Thanks for your time.
No problem.
Saturday evening in Beto Carreiro, Paul. We've had qualification today. The two heats run under blue skies, hot conditions. None of the unstable weather that we, well, forecasted earlier on. And what have we learned today? We've got a first Suzuki double pole position since 2010. So those, you know, Glenn Coldenhoff in MX2, Kevin Streibos in MXGP. I tipped Coldenhoff earlier on for the victory. I did.
You said that was if it rained tomorrow in the main race. You didn't mention qualifying.
There was no qualifier in there. No qualifying statement, I should say.
Right.
I'm shocked by Streibos, to be honest. I mean, in the morning, he wasn't really there. I mean, he was kind of a little bit like Stephen Frossard today for KRT, just a little indifferent.
Yeah, but, you know, qualifying race is a little bit different altogether. We saw the first round in Qatar, Streibos walking away with the qualifying race. Against the odds, it has to be said, a winter hampered by that pelvic injury that he had. And, you know, to arrive in Qatar, let's say, probably without any pressure to go and win, that's one thing. But to come here this weekend, knowing there's a possibility that he can win, that's a different thing altogether. But he made a good start. He actually rounded the first turn in third. It was Simpson that grabbed the whole shot. And then he just kind of ran a little bit wide. Rui Gonçalves passed Sean, and Streibos also went past Sean. So for the first lap, half a lap, it was Rui from Streibos. And I guess the key moment was on that first lap where Streibos went through, because after that, it took the guys like Paulin and DeSalle a few laps to get past the Portuguese rider, and that allowed Streibos to get away. So had that not been the case, we might have seen a different race. So that might just been the key moment of qualifying.
Well, Kevin Streibos now has two pole positions out of three, so that's a pretty good ratio so far. I think from the rest of the MXGP field, Tony Cairoli having a small tip-off, not making a great start, having to fight his way through with Jeremy Van Horbeek.
Fell twice.
Twice.
First early on, and then the second one over the left-hander at the bottom of the hill. So they uphill triple into the tight right, coming down just too fast, got it cross-rutted, disappeared over the berm, and was literally teetering over the edge, back wheel in the air, and then had to just drag the bike down and then rejoin the track on the escape route. But he dropped right the way down to 15th in that little escapade, the second one.
Well, I mean, if people want to have a look, it's on MXGP TV on the YouTube channel. Go and have a quick look at that. It's a bit of a strange crash.
But he did come back and set the fastest lap on lap 10 of 11.
Yeah.
So, but you look at his lap times, and, you know, if we just take the analysis sheet here, even from lap 6, he was banging in 203s, and then lap 7 was a 202, a 203, a 204, a 202, a 202. The final lap, lap 10 was his fastest. But, you know, that second half of the race, he was the most consistent rider, and that obviously got him into that fifth place, and he challenged Van Horbeek right on the line as well.
Once he cleared out the mistakes, then Cairoli was clearly the man to watch. But from today, just looking out there, it seems like we've almost got two or three different kind of tracks in one. You know, in a lot of places it's very hard pack and slick. In other places it's very deep, rutted. I mean, there's a real kind of mixture out there. I mean, someone like Max Anstey, who finished second in the MX2 qualification, he said there's a lot of traction. You know, the track's really grippy. But then, you know, we're seeing riders make kind of basic mistakes. Max Nagel just losing the back end, Jeremy Van Horbeek in the same corner before the little double into the big, massive jump there in the infield. So it's catching a few people out, isn't it?
It is, and the nature of the ground here, especially when it's bright sunshine, the nature of the ground, that clay dirt, when they're riding with tinted lenses, because they are because of the sunshine, it's difficult to see what's wet and what's dry as well. So you've got effectively a hard-packed track. When it's watered, it all looks the same, but you don't know where the grippier parts of that track is and where the shallow part that is the most slick is. And also, because the way that they're preparing the track, let's look at the first corner, for instance, seems a lot heavier rotivated and ploughed up. It's not just fluffed like we would get it somewhere like Matley, because the nature of the ground, and it's like looking at a farmer's ploughed field in some places, you know, and that first turn is very heavy. It has been very heavy today. So you have that element of deep ground that then on parts of the track that's just been freshly graded for the race, for instance, and then heavily watered, catch the riders out. Then you've got the ground that looks the same until the rider hits it and loses the front, you know. So, but generally, this type of ground is quite grippy, but it is going to pack down, it's going to get hard, and that respect on its own is going to be slick. Add water, it becomes, you know, pretty lethal.
Yeah, we're talking about a post-2-minute lap time, but the track does seem quick, and you have riders like Jeremy Van Horbeek, who said he's not even trying, but he said in the third fastest time in free practice, he was quickest in time practice. But then, you know, he was, when I spoke to him after the qualification, he was just like kicking his heels in frustration because, you know, that bad start. I think he was down outside the top 10. He was around 15th on the first lap. So, you know, well, coming around the first few corners. So there's a guy who's really kind of in sync with his bike. He's fit, he's fast, but if you don't get the start here tomorrow, then you're going to be languishing like Cairoli and the Belgium were today.
Yeah, well, he had a good first lap, actually, because, you know, and I know that the first lap, terms of where they are on the chart, isn't registered until you pass that finish line twice. So when they go off the start and come over and pass the line, because the start is, you know, just out of that final turn. So to have that 15th or 16th place start, he passed a handful of guys and worked his way through to 8th on the first lap, lost a position, and then from there it was just all the way up through traffic to get himself into 4th. It wasn't too far off of Gauthier Paulin either, but Cairoli, I think, was probably the most outstanding. Yes, Strybos was the race winner, but like I said at the beginning of this, you know, this brief podcast, that he made the break early, and everybody else was stuck behind Ruri for at least 2 laps. You know, tell you what was an interesting battle though was the battle between Pomod Asal and Gauthier Paulin early on. A little bit of bar banging action going on when they were both behind Ruri Gonsalves, but eventually the Belgian on the Suzuki just broke free and, you know, eventually settled for an easy second place, making it a Suzuki 1-2. But, you know, how much do we read into that little situation? Was Paulin really bothered about winning the qualifying race after watching Strybos disappear? Probably not, because we don't know what the weather's going to do tomorrow. Starting the weekend, it was going to be 90% chance rain. Now it's maybe 50% chance rain. And then some have said that it's maybe not even going to rain.
Yeah,
so
also, I think the forecast, so it's cut across you, Paul, is like 1.7 millimetres or something. I mean, it's going to be a couple of light showers and that's it. So it's a bit of a question mark over tomorrow, isn't it? I mean, riders talking about arm pump, riders talking about saving energy, riders talking about struggling a little bit in the heat. Maybe that's why we didn't see more from the likes of Evgeny Bobryshev, for example, Max Nagel making a couple of mistakes.
Yeah.
I don't know. On the other hand, you know, it's not been such a bad day for the Brits. Jake Nicholls taking a season best in 10th position. Sean Simpson was 4th up until the last 2 laps. And he just lost 2 positions to Cairoli and Van Horbeek. And then, you know, Max Anstey, of course, 2nd place in the mix too.
Yeah, and, you know, in that respect, they're all good. I was talking to Sean actually, you know, probably within an hour of qualifying finishing, and just said, to be honest, I said, what happened the last lap, you know, when you lost those 2 positions? And he said, to be honest, Van Horbeek, he had a go at me once and then passed me and fell, and then he came back at me and he got Cairoli with him. And then once Van Horbeek had gone through, he looked back and saw Cairoli there, and Cairoli came through and he said, you know what, I'm not going to eat Cairoli's roost for the last lap, what's the point? So he just backed right off and let them get on with it, you know. He's 6th, it's a great gate position for tomorrow. But going back to your earlier comment about people struggling with the heat or getting arm pump and that kind of thing, maybe conserving energy, if it does rain tomorrow, that changed the whole complexion of this circuit. So what was a pretty fast track in first practice that became a little bit rutted in time training, but, you know, was still pretty quick, like I say, just over 2 minutes, some pretty good speeds out there. You start adding that water element in there. We've seen it in 2012, how deep and wet and boggy it can be. So suddenly it's a 20-second, 25-second a lap slower racetrack than it was today, potentially.
I'm going to put my neck on the block and say that it's not going to rain that much, and I still think Glenn Coldenhove is going to take his second career victory here tomorrow for MXGP. I can't see Kevin Schreibos putting together two motos to be able to win the overall. I still think it's going to fall into the hands of someone like Clément de Sal, Gauthier Paulin, who will play the numbers. It's going to be similar podium contenders to what we've already seen in the first two rounds here. Maybe not, you know, we were hopeful this morning of maybe some, you know, kind of wild cards putting themselves in contention and breaking those, that kind of familiar group for the top three. But, you know, also we have to mention Todd Waters in seventh place is a personal best qualification position as well in MXGP. But I don't know if we have to say, Paul, I think it might be the Sal's Grand Prix. I think he had a stitch. He's sort of suffering a little bit with his breathing in the race.
Right.
But, you know, I think he's been pushing in Thailand. It might be his tomorrow.
I'm going to put my neck on the line, and to coin a phrase, I'm looking at the top three from MX2 qualifying race. Glenn Coldenhove, yes, he was a comfortable winner over Anstey and Tonus, but those two, Anstey and Tonus, were the quicker riders, I think. So I think if we get those guys out front, you know, Max Anstey putting in a 2:04 with a couple of laps to go. You know, Tonus, again, 2:04s on lap 8 and lap 10, whereas Coldenhove was only on 2:05s mid-race, and then after that, from lap 7, he was dropping 2:07s and 2:08s. But like I say, he did have a comfortable advantage, but he never got close to those 2:04s. So how much do we read into that? You know, Max, on the other hand, his two fastest laps came in the last two laps, a 2:04 and a 2:05, and those fives were quicker than the 2:05s of Coldenhove. So I'm thinking him and maybe Tonus. Again, 2:04s quicker than Coldenhove. I think we're going to see an interesting battle. Obviously, we all hope that they get around the first turn up front and make a real battle of it. And if that's the case, I think Anstey, Tonus, Coldenhove, probably your top three. And on Cairoli's performance in qualifying, the way that he pulled himself up to about 5th, 6th position and then fell down to 15th to get back to 5th and not far off of passing Van Horbeek, I think he's a strong contender for the overall, definitely. De Sal, I didn't know about his stomach cramps and that kind of thing, which is probably why then he just settled where he is. But we know he's a racer, and if he's up there and given the opportunity, for sure he's going to go out. So I think, not sure on the order just yet, but Cairoli, De Sal, Paulin, Van Horbeek, outside chance of getting on the podium.
And that's a good thing about being able to call about MXGP. It really is stick a pin in the page. But thanks, Paul. We'll discuss, you know, what happens tomorrow, just as a preview to the Grand Prix of Trentino in 2 weeks' time. There's a very small gap. We've had like 2-3 weekends before this Grand Prix, but only just one for the teams to get back to Europe and get some new components, a little bit of testing done before Arco de Trento. So we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Yeah, and don't forget, some guys have got national championship duty next week as well, so it's not even a weekend off for those. So it's going to be a busy period now, probably like 10 or 11 races in a row. They're doing national championship and world championship as well. So no rest for the wicked, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Thanks for checking into this podcast, and we'll speak to you again from Grand Prix Argentina.
Can't wait.